Hi everyone, welcome to this new podcast, a luxury insight in partnership with fashionnetwork.com. Today we're very lucky to welcome Alexandre Matussi, who's the founder of the beautiful brand Ami. He will talk to us about the development of his brand and his international journey. So have a nice day and a great podcast.
Okay, I'm talking to Alexandre Matussi here in Paris. By far one of the most interesting young designers that have emerged in Paris in the last 10 years. Alexandre.
Bonjour. Bonjour, Gottfried. Je te dis juste bonjour en français. Okay. I'm just going to say hello in French.
All right. Bonjour, bonjour.
Then I switch.
When did you first decide you wanted to be a designer? And what was your dream when you decided to open your own house?
It came at a very young age, I think. Around 15 years, 16 years old. Actually, I was, as a kid, a dancer. I used to be a ballet dancer when I was a child. And it came very naturally, yeah, during my mid-teenage time, you know. Starting to look at fashion, but in a way that more, not really imagining myself as a designer, but just being, excited by this world, you know. Back in the middle of the 90s, it was like Thierry Mugler, Jean-Paul Gaultier, the big shows, the beginning of something minimalistic with Prada and something kind of very sexy with Tom Ford at Gucci. So there was like a temptation to just, you know, look at it and starting to like it.
So did you sketch? Did you start to style?
Sketching, yeah.
Dressing yourself?
Since I'm a kid, I was always sketching, designing, trying to put things together for entertaining my friends and my parents, because as a dancer, you know, what I loved in the dancing thing was really the whole and the complete thing, you know, just not about dance, but the music, the costumes, the theatrality of this, you know, the idea of an opening and a closing curtains at the beginning and the end of a show. So all that stuff really inspired me also in the fashion world. So yeah, when I started to observe fashion shows, you know, at the TV, because at this time no internet, I was really impressed. And this world starting to make me feel like maybe I could do something. So starting to sketch for sure. And then I came to Paris to study.
Where were you born?
Born and raised in Normandy.
Oh, you're a Norman?
Yes. I'm a Norman because I was born there, but my parents
family.
Are... No, I don't have any family there because my parents just moved from Paris to Normandy
Matteo Uzi is Italian.
My father is Italian.
Born in Italy?
Not born, but his parents, yes, from Italy, from Venezia in Firenze.
Yes, and Tuscans.
Nineteen twenty-five, so a long time ago.
There's a rich tradition of Italian origin designers from Pierre Cardini to Manuel Longaro. Just thinking of just the two. Now, you studied here in Paris at
L'École du Perret,
quite an interesting school which generated a lot of interesting designers.
Yeah, it was back in the days, it was very about, again, no computer, no internet, no. So it was really about being creative, trying to find an idea, trying, my teachers was Pierre Hardy, for example, and it was a great teacher for me, and actually I had like very great memories working with him, because he was really into trying to guide us to an original idea. So it has been, I stayed like maybe 2 or 3 years at the school. And then I want to be a designer at this time. When I arrived at school, I was not sure. But at the end of the degree, I was like, okay, this is maybe the story of my life.
So then you worked for several very famous places. What was your first step?
Dior at the time where Eddie was there, but I was working on a second collection. Called at this time 30 Avenue Montaigne, which was like a little bit more classical. It was really at the beginning of Eddie's project. Yeah, I was in this fantastic time, you know, when Eddie took over the house, and it was kind of amazing, I have to say. And yes, it definitely shaped my idea of the menswear because it was menswear.
What way?
I always been very, I like the word classic in a way, like very about the wardrobe, about the real clothes, about like a jacket, a shirt, trousers. And I think Hedy was really into that too, you know, and still today when he's designing something, there is always something very real about his designs. And actually, I felt very, yeah, very okay with that. I felt like very inspired by this idea of not trying too hard. But actually, it was super modern like 20 years ago. And it was kind of even sometimes shocking. But if you look back at the pictures of Hedy's work at Dior, it was very simple at the end. It was about a black, you know, tuxedo, white t-shirt, the beautiful pair of jeans. The skinny silhouette was really into, you know, something we talked a lot about at this time. But if you look back at the clothing themselves, it was kind of precise and simple in a way.
There was nothing asymmetric.
Yeah, no, it was really like, no, it's like jacket, two sleeves, like one shape color, a very nice fitted trousers. So probably and unconsciously, it gives me the base of what I would love to do if I still keep in fashion.
You worked there for a couple of years and then you moved to...
I stayed 1 year and a half at Dior. Then I had this crazy idea to launch my first brand for 2 years, which was a fantastic time for me because I was definitely not ready to make it happen in a strong way. But it has been my first experience for myself, trying to figure out how it works to deal a small company, buying my fabrics myself, making my sale appointments by myself at the hotel lobbies, designing, sketching, producing, delivering, doing accountability. So, you know, everything was done in my home. So it lasts actually 2 years. And it was great. I didn't get any money, but I didn't lose any money too.
What did you call that brand?
It was called Ami too.
Already?
Yeah, already, yes. Because Ami, you know, is the first letters of the A from Alexander, the M from Matthew, and the last letter from my name. So it had always been like there. I knew that from a very long time that maybe one day I will do something with this word because it's really relied to me. So, and then I moved to Givenchy. Where I spy.
So you closed the business.
I closed the business. I've been called for an interview for being an assistant, like the first assistant of the new creative director at this time. Oswald Boteng, actually.
Oh, it was Oswald Boteng.
Oswald Boteng took the menswear collection at this time in 2004.
He did a video of the first...
crazy videos, actually, you know. I was 24, we didn't know who he really was, and LVMH just, you know, announced nomination. And actually, he did a kind of casting for recruitment. You know, he said, I want to meet everyone. I think he met, like, everyone for being his first assistant. And it was like a kind of, American Idol casting. We went, like, 100, then 50, then 20, then 10, then 5, then 4, then 2. And I've been chosen.
And you got the job.
I got the job because I was very young, quite inexperienced. But in the same time, I think this guy had a great energy, like a fantastic energy. And actually, yeah, we tried to work together we spent 2 years and a half together.
Before. Also, in a very different way, different. A talented tailor.
Completely different. Uh-huh. But we I have to say now, because I met him like a few years ago again, and we talked about this period together. We didn't know what to do, actually. He didn't know what to do. He didn't have actually all the skills to be, you know, that kind of creative director at this level. But I remember him really like a fantastic human being. We had like fantastic conversations together. I don't remember exactly what we've done in terms of fashion, but anyway, this is not what I keep from that time. I really keep that energy we shared together.
Oh, that's interesting. He I met him my first month in Paris. He had taken a VW bus, you know, like a surfer's bus, and he drove from London to Paris to show his collection, just like that. I made a little video of it. Well, it was a film, a little 16mm film. And he just walked right into the door, into the office of Women's Wear Daily, and announced himself. I've rarely seen a more self-confident designer.
He was so self-confident, yeah. So ambitious, so funny. He's a great guy, you know. I do believe that he's going to have his time again for lots of reasons now and for everything is happening in the world right now. I think he deserves to tell something because he's a nice guy. After that, I skipped to Marc Jacobs for the menswear collection.
Still within LVMH.
It was LVMH. I don't know. I always say I'm an LVMH kid. They asked me if I would be interested to go there. It was really in the middle of the economical crisis in 2008. So I had to move to New York, but...
With Mark
working on the men's collection. Mark was not involved in this collection, actually. He was in Paris, between Paris, New York, and Italy, because this collection was made with Staff International, with Renzo Rosso.
But this was Marc Jacobs, not Vuitton.
No, yes, Marc Jacobs. The Marc Jacobs menswear line. And actually, this collection was directed by Joe McKenna as a consultant, but he was completely, you know, in it. And
you would begin going to Venice then, to the factory?
Factories, designing sessions in New York. And I was supposed to move to New York. But because the economical crisis came along the story, I, at the end, didn't want to go there.
Yeah.
Because I felt maybe there is an opportunity for me to stay here and to maybe start to work on my own project.
So what year? You start, it's 10 years this year.
9 years. Actually, yeah, I built the company in 2010.
Yeah.
And introduced Ami with the first collection in January 2011. So
here in Paris.
Yes. So this
a
is
show,
my...
A show, a collection, a runway show?
No, it was a presentation in a tiny bar close to Place des Victoires here in Paris. 10 models, 10 guys, 20 people coming to see the collection, some journalists, some friends, my parents for sure. But it was a very, very tiny presentation. And it was the beginning of something. Yes, it happened very, very quickly and it worked till the very first day.
When you do that first step, that's the second time again, so you were much
more prepared. I took 1 year and a half to... prepare just right after Marc Jacobs when I quit it. I knew and I had to really focus on the story I was going to tell. I was really about finding the good producers, manufacturers, to be assured to make this collection happen in a very professional way. I find money for that. I ask for some, you know, business angels to be part of the story.
To invest
in the company, because I had no money, to be honest. And I didn't want to struggle.
How much money did you...
Actually, I raised 250. 250,000 euros, yeah.
Très bien.
Yeah, because I said, this is the business plan I've done at this time, to be sure that from day one, if I don't sell anything... I need to be sure that I can live for 1 year, minimum, you know?
Yeah.
But fortunately, we sold the collection right away. So we had like a strong turnover the first year.
Who bought it right away, out of curiosity? Which?
First day, Mr. Porter. They were born the same, you know, 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
We did like this fantastic partnership with Mr. Porter. We did the... partnership with Barney's at this time, an exclusive distribution for the US. We did Corso Como in Milano, and we did Le Bon Marché in Paris.
All the right people.
Yeah, first season.
Those were the key ones. So already you knew.
Yeah, and you know, like kind of, you know, a strong orders. So so from the first season, I think I sold, I remember, like 20,000 pieces.
Oh, so already that was quite a lot of revenue.
Yeah, it was like I could make like a strong production. My suppliers were super happy. I had
20,000 pieces.
The first year was like 20,000 pieces.
So you're selling a couple of million already.
Not a million, but nearly. It's becoming.
So you
quite
knew
big.
That you were given that gave you the self-confidence.
Self-confidence and press were there. Customers were there. From the beginning, and this is like what I'm the most proud of today, is like to see that people who were the customer at the really beginning are still most of them are still here and still buying the brand.
What define the DNA of Ami?
I would say like In terms of philosophy and in terms of energy, I can say that we are a very happy brand. You know, we really love what we're doing. We are still like super passionate about what we're doing.
Yeah.
We really concentrate and focus on clothing. We always ask about, do we want to wear this? Do we want to see someone wearing this? And we share that point of view with the people, like, you know, who works with me and my friends and my family. And I'm really into that kind of conversation that we still keep going, you know, about are we going in the right direction? Because do you still see yourself wearing this? I'm not my first, you know, ambassador, but in a way I trust myself and I can say that I want to wear that kind of stuff. So this, I would say happiness, I would say simplicity, honesty, good quality for sure, good price for sure, because I think it's kind of part of the success of the brand. We have been from the beginning at a level of price which was kind of, you know, good, I think, and still today, that really helped me to enter into the market with a strong kind of point of view. At this time, you know, back in the days where we didn't have that kind of, you know, creative and easy, classic, effortless brand, but still, you know, working on good fabrics, on good fabrication, and good proportions and design. And
you don't say Parisian or French.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, I say because it's like super Parisian. Yeah. But I don't want to say too much because I feel like, you know, we are so Parisian, you know, and actually this is the way the brand is seen from the outside. So for sure, Japanese, Chinese, or even an American guy see us as a really strong French brand. And actually this is what I try to do because I'm inspired by the way I live here and the people I know here, and I'm still very inspired by this kind of, yes, very strong Parisian energy. But in the same time, does that mean really something to say this is a Parisian brand when everyone is wearing the kind, same of, you know, of clothes everywhere in the world today? So, yeah, it's definitely French because I'm here.
There was, you know, in the last several years in menswear, there was this giant kind of invasion of streetwear and logos and color and athleticism and bling. But you have resisted that.
I don't know if I resist, but I feel like I like to mix things, you know, from a personal point of view, the way I dress myself. It's really about mixing that kind of, and actually maybe this is the old-fashioned way to say it, but the kind of, you know, classic and casual, you know, and classic and streetwear to maybe sound stupid when I say it, but I like the way I dress today. You know, I'm having a suit, a t-shirt, and a pair of white trainers. So now it's definitely something that everyone is wearing. But at the beginning, still like, you know, 9 years ago, this is the kind of beginning of the streetwear thing, the way to mix a suit with a pair of trainers or a t-shirt. But today, yeah, I put that kind of streetwear idea in my collection, but in a very natural way. I don't want to say I'm a streetwear brand because I don't, you know, I'm not a streetwear brand, definitely. But I take some ideas from the streetwear wardrobe to add it in my, you know, wardrobe.
When did you open your first store?
First store opened the 12th, the 12th December of 2012.
On
Rue Boulevard Beaumarchais, in the Marais.
Near the Cirque d'Hiver.
Yeah.
That's still your original flagship.
Yeah, it's still there. We make some hard
work. What was the store before?
It was, actually, it was an architect thing, like they sold like materials for architects.
Okay.
It was really, really not expensive at this time. Merci was there since a couple of years.
Yeah.
The Merci store, you know. Actually, the boulevard was quite empty because there was still like at this time photographs, you know, stores and motorcycle stores, but it was not really a fashion
destination. Now it's become a fashion destination, very much.
And we were the first one actually to open the store there. And today there is a lot of people around, but yeah, I still love very much this location.
What did you want to say when you opened the store aesthetically? What statement do you want to make of the architect?
I really want... So we worked with Studio KO, Studio KO, Carl et Olivier, Olivier Marty et Carl Fournier.
Right.
Actually, I really love their work at this time.
Yeah.
We've been introduced and we really wanted... Because they didn't do any retail things in fashion before at this time.
Yeah.
They did it a little bit after, but it was a conversation about... For sure, I was really into, again, that old-fashioned way to... open a retail store. I really wanted to make it like very chaleureux, very classic, using wood and mirrors and like heavy curtains, having like a very warm light in it. I really wanted to make it sound and to make it look as an old like Parisian apartment. So there are still that kind of details in the new openings we're doing now in Asia, for example. There are still like that kind of vibes. For sure, it has evolved. But I think it's really part of the image of the brand because we have like 10 stores today now.
Is that what you have? You have 10 stores?
Yeah, we opened next week, one in Shanghai and one in Korea.
Your own, these are franchises or your own?
No, it's our own, yes. It's directly
So have you gone back to Business Angels again? You've been able to fund your own development largely?
Yeah, we opened the capital, the way. We had investors. They came like a few years ago. I still have the majority of the brand, so I'm still the president, the creative director, the founder, the... I still keep it, and I'm going to still keep it for a long time. But
may I ask, what are your annual sales today?
I never say the figures. Yeah, I don't know why, but I feel like I feel it. I don't want to say the figures.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I feel it's always misinterpreted.
Misinterpreted. Yeah.
I always say because you know it's like money. It's not about like the French thing. Yeah. You say no, I don't want to say because it doesn't. It's not about that. I'm not shy about figures, but. I feel like people don't understand what does that mean if you give like a final turnover.
Okay.
Because it costs a lot of money to deal like, you know, 140 people working for me to open store, to make shows. So you have to show the balance to make it, you know, feel real.
So that's how many people work for you, 100?
140, like around 140 today.
That's a lot.
It's like 100 in Paris and 40 in London, Japan, China, Korea, a little bit everywhere.
Why did you decide to do women's wear and when did you do that?
I'm surrounded by women since I'm a kid. I love women, I love girls. And because I've been like... accidentally a menswear fashion designer because I started my career at Dior and then Givenchy and Marc Jacobs. So for me, it was really relevant to start AMI as a menswear brand because this is where my skills were.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the same time, I saw my girlfriends around me starting to look at the collection and starting to say, I would love to try this trousers or this shirt. And it worked very well. And we were at this time, like again, a few years ago, where girls were... It was not a trend, but it was really about, okay, we are allowed to wear like a men's jacket or men's trousers or women's shirt, like men's shirt, sorry, to mix things together. And very naturally, they came in the stores. So they started to be a kind of, you know, a strong part of the business, you know. For example, in Korea, for example, today, actually a few years ago, with the menswear collection, it was 50%, it was women's buying the men's clothes. So it was really interesting to see that with like...
So it was a logical progression.
A logical thing. I was really into saying maybe let's try women's wear, but not in the way that I'm going to start with like a dress or a skirt. So it was really doing the men's for women's. So I called it like l'homme pour la femme at this time. It worked very well. And then I was like kind of frustrated because, you know, when you do a jacket, a trousers, a coat and a shirt, you want more, you know. And I had a very nice conversations with my girlfriends and my friends and everyone say, okay, let's try women's wear. You should do it. You should do a heel on the shoe. You should try jewelry. You should try like skirts and dresses. And now, yeah, it's definitely something I assume because, you know, you never feel legitimate when you are a menswear designer at the conversation we had just before to try to start womenswear because you feel like the industry is looking at you and trying to see if they're going to make it happen, you know. And I take my time. I don't care about people, what they say. I just feel like my customers are the only one that gives me the reason or not to do it.
When did you do put a first show with women on a catwalk in Paris?
I had like few girls on the winter 18, but definitely the first collection mixed men's and women's equally.
50-50.
It was like the fall winter 2019 collection, the one I showed at the Palais de Chaillot with the Eiffel Tower and the curtains.
I think for the benefit of our audience, it's important to remember that. I remember when I first began to see your collections, you were showing along the Seine underneath the building, the Yfim building. You know, it was quite organic and youthful and quite colourful. There was an optimism about it, but it was kind of a very indie project. So to see you show in the Palais de Chaillot with giant curtains, a much more sophisticated setting, showed a very big progression as a designer. Did you feel that when you were showing
it? This is what I wanted to do, because I felt I have to actually assume also the way we became. You know, we changed, you know, and I like this idea of a brand has to progress, has to change, has to move forward, and has to never hesitate to disturb a little bit the whole thing, you know. And I had in me something that I really wanted to assume, not feeling, you know, guilty about, you know,
not having a complex.
Exactly, you know. I said, okay, I'm having my 7 or 8 years. I'm strong. We have a strong business. We are now, we have a worldwide distribution. And I want to assume that kind of more sophisticated, more luxurious idea of the brand, because élever le projet vers le haut, quoi. C'était...
And take it to another level.
Exactly. And I think it was the right timing to do it. And it was the same idea with my collaboration with the last photographers I worked with Michael Beleguetz or Paolo Roversi recently, just to give a kind of strong, you know, idea of beauty and timeless and sophisticated thing.
Well, you then took it to another level again with a more theatrical, grander show in the Grand Palais, the, you know, the kind of place where one expects to see Chanel or a giant, you know, like a global billion-dollar brand, you know?
I never hesitate now to see it big, you know, because when you start a business, you are very shy. I was shy, you know, 10 years ago, and I feel like I haven't wasted my time, but, you know, I think it takes time to experience. It takes time to know yourself. It takes time to understand how it's working. And at a certain level, I feel like I deserve also. I don't feel, you know, embarrassed when I've been invited to show my collection in Le Grand Palais. And actually, when they asked us, they said, we have an opportunity for you. Maybe there is like a free, you know, slot on it, and maybe you can do it. We say at the Grand Palais, it's too big. Carl was just like, you know, passed away a few months before. And actually Chanel gave the authorization for us to show there, because we had to ask them, okay, don't you mind if Ami go there?
As it must have been a lot of money.
No, not so much. Not so much.
They wanted to have a young brand.
Yeah, yeah. They did want to, you know, to give also another perspective Le Grand Palais, because this city belongs to everyone. So I think this is what I said to myself. Okay, Le Grand Palais is not just about Chanel. It has to be also something we can fit in. And that's why actually I made it like very humble and simple. I just put chairs around a circle.
Yes, and sort of school chairs.
Yeah, I didn't want to build like, you know, a rocket.
No, you
something
use
like that.
The space.
I use a space and I try to make it like a...
two concentric circles.
Exactly. And concentrate into the clothes themselves. Because at the end, I'm known for, you know, trying to make some theatrical presentation with like a trick or an idea or setup or something. But on this one, I really wanted to make it like the most simple as it can be.
You are a graduate from Pernay, and you know, there are other great schools here, you know, from Yfim, or, you know, there's Marangoni. There are quite a few schools in Paris. But somehow, when people think of great fashion schools and graduates, there's still an international perception that they come out of St. Martin's or FIT much more than Paris. Do you think that's fair? And if it is true, I think it is true.
It is.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think Paris is like, we take, I feel like there is a French way to take our time, you know. We have like the way we live our lives here, we are envied. People are very kind of jealous of the way we live our lives to have like a...
You think?
I think so. You know, when I was working in New York, I was like feeling so French, you know, because... And I'm a hard worker, you know. I'm not lazy at all. But I remember this time, the first day I was there, you know, trying to escape for lunchtime.
Yeah.
And they looked at me like, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm gonna have a lunch." And they say, you know, it's like better if you take a sandwich quickly before front of your computer.
Brown bagger. Yeah.
And I say, this is funny because I don't think the way we live our lives, you know, makes us, you know, less effective in the way we work, you know. But again, you know, I think the way we study art or fashion in the French schools at this time, you know, back in the days, was really cool, you know, no pressure, you know. And I feel like the EFM school are really changing the game now. I think in a few years we will be able to say that we can definitely compete with like the other St. Martin's or... You know, the other school.
I think you're probably right. I think also it's interesting that France's cousin is Belgium, and an awful lot of designers also come from Lacombe, won again today, nominated in Courrèges. But do you think there's also, in a way, a kind of Anglo-Saxon lobby of American Vogue and English newspapers and editors and websites who promote this idea that it's a...
Probably they maybe are stronger and better organized. But but France is a small country. We have to say that, you know, the Anglo-Saxons definitely reach a wider audience, you know. As French, we talk French. And, you know, French community in the world is smaller, definitely, you know. So I feel like that's something that's going to change because of the... We're already into it, but the social media have definitely changed the rules. And... the world is shaped in another way now. So I don't feel like we need to think this way. I think, everybody are kind of equal. Everybody's an influencer. Everybody has a voice. Everybody can make the things change quickly, very quickly. And this is the great thing about it. I think, the way, and I have to say that to you too, the journalist voice versus sometimes someone that, you know, have 2 or 3 million followers on Instagram, sometimes have a stronger
opinion. Talking about social media, the central obsession nowadays for so many people is T-Mobile, it's, you know, Alibaba, it's the Chinese millennial. And everyone, you know, that's the future, everyone, every kind of marketer tells. What do you think of that, and how do you address that? How do you, deal with that?
To be honest, a few years ago, because I didn't know China, I've never been there, and I feel like sometimes bad on me. I had like maybe a bad idea of everything, you know. I was like kind of, you know, intimidated. Do I believe in a business there? But everybody was telling me around me, we have to go there because they deserve and we deserve all to be together. And actually, definitely, since I've been there, I really believe that, you know, the world is big and we have to share this all together. So Ami deserves to be in China, but deserves to be in the United States, deserves to be in Europe, in London. So I'm completely okay with that. Because we have to know there is like 1.5 billion people there. The perspective of growing business are definitely there. So we are really pushing the Asian side for Ami because there is like a fantastic opportunity. And we have met like amazing people, great talents, strong ideas, very inspiring people, you know. And this is just a question of open mind, you know. We have to open our minds And as a young designer, because I'm not LVMH, you know, so I don't know that from the past. So I'm just discovering it from my point of view as a manager, a designer, a president of my company. I think there is like definitely something to do with them. And actually we're doing it, and we're doing it in a very nice way. And and this is kind of, yeah, super cool.
One of the key ways you've developed your brand and your great reputation is through fashion shows, often done in interesting locations, cleverly reinterpreted for the collection, each collection. When is your next collection? What can we expect?
So, first of all, during this COVID, like, crazy time, when we've been all agreed that it was really weird to show anything in June during the Menswear Fashion Week. So when we all decided that's going to be cancelled, like, in a physical way, I was like completely okay with that, because I felt like maybe there is an opportunity for everyone to just take off a little bit, like, you know, and to start to understand what we're going to do and what we're going to change. And because this pandemic will change, like, for sure, everything we've done before. It has to change. Some things can stay, something has to be, you know, deleted. So we've been patient. We had to sell this collection anyway, because we produced it in a very difficult way, because no factories, half-time, you know, workers in the fabrics suppliers. My company, myself, we did like a kind of chômage partiel. So it has been tricky, but we succeeded to develop like a very beautiful small collection, very edited, very straight to the point, very 50-50. Sincere. We did men's and women's, and we sold actually the menswear collection in July, actually, in a digital showroom. Actually, it was fun, and it actually worked kind of well, because actually the customer, we didn't invent anything new on this collection, because they knew the fit, they knew the fabric, they knew everything. So we just tried to cook something with what we have in the fridge. So it was very like a natural way to cooking. So they really liked the collection, and we kept the women's collection, pretending maybe we will be allowed to show in October. And we start to talk with La Fédération, and we said we would love to be part of this Fashion Week, because I believe that this collection, and actually designers, deserve to show their collection in the real world.
When will you show in September?
We will show Saturday night, the 3rd of October. We close the day, and so at 8 o'clock.
Where will you show?
I can't say. No, because we still have, you know, prefecture and everything, authorization, because we're going to do it outside. And when you do a show outside, you have like lots of authorization. So we have something now. We cross our fingers, like lots of fingers around the ID crossed. Thank you, Godfrey, for crossing yours. And I'm very happy with this collection. I'm very happy with this show. And I think this is an opportunity also for my clients, customers, partners, everyone, to show that we are here. Stronger than ever. And this is my job is to do clothes and fashion shows.
I have a question. I was looking today on the official government French website to get, because I wanted to go and get tested and how you would do it, you know, just in case, you know, a couple of weeks beforehand. And they actually said you're not allowed groups of more than 10 people to meet under French, that's the regulations. What is the situation? Is there a special dispensation for fashion? What has the Federation told you?
First of all, no Asian coming to the show, no American, no English, no Italian. So when you cut the list, we still have French people around the table.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a French journalist, friends of the family, friends of, you know. Mm-mm. So I think we're going to invite 150 people maximum. And the location is big enough to put everyone with like at least 1 meter, you know, distance together. We will have masks, we will have gel hydroalcoholique, we will take care of our guests. And at the really, really end, if something is happening and we are not allowed to invite anyone, we will make like a kind of show for filming. We're going to have to film it anyway.
Final question for you.
Okay. Ready. Concentrated.
For a young person, a young man or woman, wanting to go into fashion, become a designer or something creative, what is the advice you would give them if they were starting out or making the first steps?
I will take maybe the advice that I've been received a few years ago, that in French it sounds like on donne les exercices les plus difficiles aux meilleurs élèves. So we give the most difficult exercise to the best students. That means that it's going to be difficult. It's a difficult journey. I've been lucky enough, everything went in a very nice way for myself, but it's a lot of work. You really have to believe in yourself. You really have to shape your idea to make it the most understandable as possible. It's a very difficult word to say in English. Yeah, just believe in yourself. Go very, very, yeah, very strongly, deeply. Don't hesitate. Yeah, straight to the point. And actually, my assistant, Arthur, he was working for me for the last 8 years, actually. He came very, very early. And he just left the company a few months ago. And he has a project. And I remember, like, 2008, like, really, when I left from Marc Jacobs, 2009, actually, like, more than 10 years ago, when I started to say to everyone, I think I'm going to launch my brand. Like, 99% of the guys and people I knew at this time, they all said to me, you're crazy, don't do it. Everybody said to me, don't do it. It's difficult. It costs a lot of money. It's not going to work. One said to me, okay, your project is doing clothes like a kind of classic wardrobe. Yes, don't do it. Like everybody, and everyone who said that to me reinforced, you know, the idea of, okay, I'm going to not prove them because I don't care about the others at this time, but I said, okay, I'm going to do it because there is always a chance to do something, you know? The world is moving every day, 24 hours a day. It's like something is happening. And I think in this kind of, you know, really strong crisis in the world, I feel like we are all in a cocotte minute, like, you know, like we are all, you know, waiting for the moment we could start again, you know, everything, dancing, drinking, fucking, like, lovely. You know, just live our lives in a very, like, naive way. So keep the naivety of everything. And the insouciance of everything, but in the same time, organize yourself to make it like strong enough to make it happen like successfully.
Alexandre Matuisi, it's been a pleasure.
Merci beaucoup, Godfrey. À bientôt.